Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with host Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist, author, and international expert in the area of grief and loss. Tune in and hear bereaved parents and siblings share their stories of loss, hope, and renewal. You will learn what they have done to cope, how they have established a new normal in their lives, and how they have gone on to do fantastic things. Dr. Gloria dedicates this show to her deceased son, Scott, and to all the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. And now, with Healing the Grieving Heart, here's your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley. Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart. We know you're hurt and that you miss that special person in your life. It is true that your life will never be the same. However, with time and support, you will again find meaning and purpose in your life. My guests are here each week to tell you that we have made it and so can you. Remember that just going about your day-to-day business is an accomplishment, whether it's working in the home or the office. I also want to tell you today that the Compassionate Friends and I have received many requests for CDs of my show, Healing the Grieving Heart. Many of you have expressed your wish to share these shows and the insights from my wonderful guests with others who are also grieving. It's with great pleasure that I announce the availability of the first set of 10 selected compact discs in each and an easy-to-carry and store case. I'm also pleased to have the opportunity to share with you pictures on the box and the discs of my son, Scott, in whose memory I dedicate my work. The set will normally sell for $60, but for a limited time, it's available at the introductory price of only $45, with all proceeds benefiting the Compassionate Friends. To obtain an order form, please visit the Compassionate Friends website at CompassionateFriends.org or visit my website at Healing the Grieving Heart. You can email me at gchorsley@aol.com, and if you'd like to go on a telephone, you can go to 877-969-0010. Well, it's with great pleasure today that I introduce my topic and my guest. Our topic today is Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to Wartime Vietnam, and my guest is Tom Riley. Tom has a degree in psychology and has served in the U.S. Army as a military policeman and a criminal investigator. At age 7, Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian and his idol. In July of 1907, Ron died in Vietnam. Tom, at age 19, journeyed to war-torn Vietnam to find answers. Today, Tom is going to share with us his rendering story, with a heartfelt story with us, and which he also gives us in his wonderful best-selling book, Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to War-Time Vietnam. Tom, welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart.
Thank you, Gloria. It's good to be here with you today.
It's great to have you on the show. I must say, in reading your book, it's an amazing book, and it's really a Tom Sawyer kind of story.
Well, I'm flattered that I'd be compared to somebody like Mark Twain. It is a heartfelt story. It's a heart rendering story. It's written with a lot of love for my older brother. And you had mentioned my parents dying, and the first part of the book covers a young boy's reaction to the death of both parents dying. They died a week apart, as a matter of fact.
Can you tell our audience about what they died of? It's very did your mom die of a broken heart? Do you think her death was related to your dad dying?
I think it was possible. My father died. He was as I say in the first chapter of Next of Kin, he was a hard-working, hard-drinking Irishman. And he worked almost two full-time jobs all the time. And at age 49, he suffered a stroke and was taken to a hospital and died 3 days later. And this took place in July of 1958, and I was 7 years old at the time. And 7 days later, after the funeral for my father and after all the relatives had gone their separate ways and so on, my mother was sitting in a chair talking to me, and she was age 42 at the time. She put her hand to her head and said, "I have a terrible headache," and she never got the word headache completely out. She had died of a massive cerebral hemorrhage. And when I was studying psychology, I did come across an article one time in one of the medical journals about how grief does affect the physical nature of a person, and if they're susceptible to anything, that 7 to 10 days after the death of a of a relative, especially a spouse, mm-hmm. there's a tremendous shock wave that overcomes a survivor. And mm-hmm. My mother had very high blood pressure, and so that was possibly a contributing factor, the grief.
Wow, yeah. How did you cope with that as a seven-year-old? It must have, did she actually die there in the chair, or did they get her to the hospital, or, you know, that's
just
incredible.
Yes, she actually died in the chair, and I didn't know this at the time, of course. It was at the home of my much older sister, a grown sister at the time. I was the baby of the family at age seven, and so I was quickly ushered outside, and the next thing I saw was the paramedics arriving and so on, and a couple hours later I was informed that my mother was gone. And coping with it, the death of my father did not strike me as severely as the death of my mother. I wasn't as close to my father as I was to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
He was always off working somewhere and doing all this. I barely knew my father, even though we had a fully functioning family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very curious about the whole escapade of the funeral home and the burial and all this with my father. And then when my mother died, I felt very alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, even though I had older siblings, I knew that I was pretty much on my own.
It couldn't have been a very safe, feeling like a very safe world to you.
No, it wasn't. When you lose both parents and in such a short period, it didn't seem. And I guess you're the first one to ever mention it that way to me, but you're exactly right. It didn't seem like a very safe world. However, I had an older brother named Ron. He was 13 years older than me. And I knew as long as I had him, I still had some safety in the world. I knew that somebody would look out for me.
Now, you even knew that when you went to the farm. I know your brother-in-law, you were working hard on the farm, which I'm from that kind of background, and I know kids, my friends who were on the farm, were milking cows in the morning before school. You know, it's a hard life.
Yeah, I was taken from this nice little small-town childhood, and I went to live with my older sister and her husband on a dairy farm, and this is in central Wisconsin, and I was worked quite hard, and my brother-in-law's work ethic was very sound and very stable, and I almost became a hired hand on the farm, so it was quite a change for me, but I still had my brother, Ron, who
even was then, when you were on the farm,
yeah.
You knew.
Yeah, even then I knew it wasn't the right life for me on the farm, and Ron was a career soldier at the time, so he was always in a different part of the world, and I would live from one episode of his leave to the next episode of his leave. He would come home once a year, every 6 months or whatever for a few days, and those were the highlights of my childhood then, because we became very close, even though he was physically in a different part of the world most of the time.
Well, yes, tell our audience about getting on your bike. I mean, that is an incredible story, deciding that you couldn't be on the farm anymore. How old are you, 12?
I was about 13.
13. You've got a lovely picture of you with your bike in the book. Getting on your bike and riding off, how many miles?
Well, I became a runaway. I decided I decided I was not going to be a farmer after all, and it was quite a harsh life on the farm, and I didn't get along very well with my brother-in-law and so on. And so I had hinted to my older brother at one point that I needed to change my life, and he saw that it was difficult for me living on this farm as well. And so one night when I was, I think it was 13 years old, I just got on my Schwinn bike and rode 35 miles to another small town in central Wisconsin, where I had another older brother, and I stayed with him briefly, and then ended up in my own small little hole in the wall.
Yes, tell him about that. That's an incredible story. How long were you with your brother before Ron rented the apartment for you, didn't he?
Yes, my brother came home. Ron came home from the military on emergency leave when he heard that I had run away from the farm, and within a couple of months, he had enough confidence in me that I could live on my own and succeed. And in a small town environment, and in that time in our country's history, it was possible. I wouldn't recommend it today for any teenager doing that. But I was running to a better life, that's what I thought. I wasn't running away to get involved in drugs and drinking and any of that sort of thing. I was running to a life that I thought I could control and make better for myself. So he rented this small apartment, and it was barely as wide as a desk. I had to kind of hold my feet in so I could sleep crossways across the end of the apartment. And for $40 a month, I lived surreptitiously, really. I didn't tell anybody that I lived alone.
You didn't want to bring your friends over? None of your friends knew?
No, I didn't bring anybody over. I didn't want to blow a good thing, I guess.
Right, you didn't want to end up in foster care or something.
Yeah, exactly.
With
I didn't want to have to pay tuition to go to a public school. And so I had this ruse that I lived with my older brother all through high school.
And then he'd go to the school with you when he came on leave, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I would show him off. When he would come home on leave, I would show him off all over town so people would believe my story that I actually lived alone. But I worked 2 to 3 part-time jobs after school and on the weekends, so it was actually a pretty good life.
You know what? I'll have to say this story is so incredible because there's a lot of humor in it. I found myself laughing at some of these situations that you were in.
Well, I think it's an author's job to if he can make an unknown reader who's never met him experience the emotions of laughter and sadness and crying. I think an author does his job if he does that. And since the overall topic of the book is grief and sadness and my response to that, I only felt it was proper to give the reader a break and put in some humor as well along the way.
But the fact, you know, as you know, somebody who's had so much tragedy, and as I know from tragedy in my life, there is a lot of humor in it because you just have to laugh at some of these things, particularly you do such crazy things at times.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a crazy situation when you have people die. And I hope that as we go on with the show, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the humor in it that you had in your life. And then we're going to come up on break now. When we get back from break, I'd like to talk a little bit more with my guest, Tom Riley. And Tom has a degree in psychology and has served in the U.S. Army as a military policeman and a criminal investigator. At age 7, Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian and his idol. In 1970, Ron died in Vietnam, and Tom, at age 19, journeyed to war-torn Vietnam to find answers. And Tom's sharing his story with us today. If you would like to email me, you can email me at gchorsley@aol.com, or you can go on my website at healingthegrievingheart.com. And also, I'm pleased to announce that we have CDs of selected shows that you can purchase through, you can call a toll-free number, 877-969-0010, or you can go to my website or the Compassionate Friends website. And remember always that these shows are all archived, so you can hear them day or night around the world. We're coming on break, and please stay tuned with Dr. Gloria Horsley and Tom Riley.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Every Monday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time, tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis. Pat will interview authors and experts in the field of alternative and traditional medicine and discuss current issues. Accurate information will be provided, beliefs and practices will be shared, and listener questions will be answered. This show is about helping educate listeners to become empowered so that they can make informed choices regarding their physical, spiritual, and emotional health. So tune in to hear Healing with Pat Honeyotis and learn more about your healthcare options. Only on the world's elite health station, your life, your health, your network, Voice America Health and Wellness.
We all want to improve the environment, but not all of us are willing to make radical changes in our lifestyle to help. If you're one of the millions of people who want to change the world without changing your life, tune in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time for The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman. The Lazy Environmentalist is about easily and effortlessly greening our modern lifestyles without ever sacrificing style. Host Josh Dorfman will bring together designers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who are rapidly making the modern green lifestyle a reality. So help your world and help yourself by listening to The Lazy Environmentalist with Josh Dorfman every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria, and my guest today is Tom Riley, author of the best-selling book, Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to War-Torn Vietnam. Tom has a degree in psychology and has served in the U.S. Army as a military policeman and a criminal investigator. At age 7, both Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian. In July of 1970, Ron died in Vietnam. Tom, at age 19, journeyed to war-torn Vietnam to find answers. On this show, Tom shares with us his heart-rending story. Well, Tom, we've gone from, you've been on the farm, you've run away from home, you're now living in the city, you're living in this little room, Ron comes back and forth, and he is in the military, and you are now, you graduate from high school. Did he get to your high school graduation?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he had spent two tours in Vietnam in 67, 68, and then somewhere in 69. And I graduated from high school in June of 69. And he had come back and was stationed at Fort Hood, Texas for about a year. And so he was fortunate enough to come to my high school graduation. And he had always instilled in me this thing about my future. When I was even 10 years old, he took me to museums in Chicago and Milwaukee. He took me to a university campus, University of Wisconsin-Madison. He told me this is where I needed to set my sights, that the only way he would allow for me to live on my own with his knowledge was to keep my grades high in high school, so I remained most of the time on the honor roll and worked all these part-time jobs. So he taught me, between the work ethic that I learned living on the dairy farm and what he instilled in me, I learned a lot about the future and what my future was supposed to be.
That's fantastic. Now tell me, did you miss your parents? Did you cry at night ever by yourself there? Were you sad that they weren't at your graduation? Was there any way that you remembered them, or through letters or anything? Or
yes, obviously I missed them. Their death, I think the youngness of Tom Riley at the time of their death, I was only 7 years old, I think that helps a lot. Even though, you know, age 7 is supposedly the age of reason, I remembered everything distinctly and vividly, but I think because of a young, tender age, your emotions are somewhat more protected for grief. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I missed them. I thought about them at my high school graduation and my plans for going on to college the next year and so on. But their death was almost something in the past for me at that point. And I tried to concentrate on living a good life and succeeding for the future, and I had this older brother, Ron, that kept pushing me in that direction constantly.
Now, he hadn't been to college, had he?
No, he hadn't, and he was one of these type of people that wanted something better. If I would have been his son rather than his younger brother, it was a typical case of a father wanting his son to succeed more than he did.
Mm-hmm.
He never wanted me to go into the military. The only way he wanted me to go into the military was if I could have gone as an officer, and he was an enlisted man, and he had been in for 10 years, 11 years at the time of his death. But he always wanted something better for me.
Now, you went to a year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tell us what happened then.
Well, after my freshman year of college. And
are you in still in the same room, by the way, when you're in college, or where did you go?
No, as a matter of fact, I went off to college, and I actually lived in a dormitory. It was like living in a palace compared to my little one-room apartment. And, you know, I got better meals and so on, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, where all the money came from. I had saved up money for my part-time jobs to attend college. And
how much did you save?
Well, it was enough. I was a resident at the time of Wisconsin, so the tuition was, it was only like $250 a year or something, plus some room and board, so... I had saved a lot of money up, and also I was receiving Social Security payments from the death of my parents ever since they had died. So,
it
helped a lot. It helped a lot. I had put in this 1 year of college, and then I had no place to live at the end of the year. I didn't really want to go back to my little apartment, so I actually took a job remodeling and painting this old house in a sleepy little town called Montello, Wisconsin. And it was a small resort town. And one day when I was up on a ladder painting this house, a military sedan pulled in to the driveway. And I was so excited. I thought it was my brother coming home from Vietnam. He had since gone to Vietnam like 4 months before that for his another combat tour. And it was kind of his idea to keep going back to Vietnam so I wouldn't have to as I became draft eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And because one relative at that time could actually block another one from coming into the combat zone in the service.
Oh, is that right?
So that was part of his plan. Mm-hmm. And plus, he was a soldier. He felt that a combat zone was where a soldier belonged during a war. But when this Army sedan pulled into this driveway, I thought it was him coming home. I could see... uniform. I couldn't see the face of the driver. I could only see part of a uniform, and I could see some sergeant stripes, and he was a sergeant. And so I went running down the ladder, and unfortunately, it turned out not to be Ron in that car. It was actually a sergeant coming to inform me of his death and hand me that typical yellow telegram that begins, "We regret to inform you."
Wow.
And the heart, as I mentioned in the book, I believe it's chapter 5 in the book when I talk about this, a very poignant chapter, the heartfelt exhilaration that I felt running down that ladder off from my
Yeah, you do a wonderful job of describing that. I felt like I was right there with you.
Yeah, I thought I was going to see my brother, and when I looked up in under the bill of the service hat, I could see that it wasn't my brother, that it was somebody with... he already had tears in his eyes, and he was coming to tell me that my brother was dead halfway around the world, and my whole life changed that day. And the problem with that death notification was that the telegram said of non-combat related causes.
Mm-hmm.
Now that can
be and you
anything.
Noticed that right away.
I noticed it immediately. I read when I was able to unfold and read the telegram that afternoon. One of the things that stuck in my mind was non-combat related death. And, you know, so all kinds of things raced through my head. You know, was he murdered? Was it suicide? Was it an accident? Was it friendly fire? Was it illness? What was his cause of death?
And I want to just let our audience know today that we're not going to tell you what it was. So don't be disappointed when we don't. We'll play around the edges, but part of the fun of this book and part of the interest and excitement is the mystery. And we want you to find out the ending, you know, and those facts by reading the book. But anyway, we'll play around the edges, right, Tom?
Right. The thing that I tell other people, though, is, and I don't mean to sound harsh, but dead is dead.
Mm-hmm. But people have trouble dealing with that at first, and I know you did because I know I was reading, when I was reading it, you're getting ready to go to Vietnam, you're trying to get there, we'll tell our audience about that, and you also get, $11,000, was that how much you got or something?
I think it was $12,000 time of insurance money from my brother. I was the official next of kin and his beneficiary.
So you had the money to go find out.
Right, and
what happened to your brother?
Yeah, since I wasn't given a cause and I couldn't get an answer, I spent within 7 or 9 days, I believe it was, I received his body back. I went to I actually flew from Wisconsin to Oakland Army Barracks in California.
Mm-hmm. I'm out in San Francisco, so, yeah.
Yeah, and...
That was a whole other thing, the big wooden box with the handles.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And I don't know, just the way you write, I had to laugh because the top of it said head. I don't know.
Yeah,
there was something so bizarre about that.
It was a very bizarre experience, and I was told not to do this. I was told not to fly to California to fly back on the same plane with my brother's casket because that just wasn't done in those days. Relatives didn't come to that point of the funeral situation, and so, but I wasn't very good at listening.
Well, you've done your own thing all your life. Why would you?
Yeah, I was pretty much on my own. I was very independent at the time, and this, and don't forget my frame of mind at the time. I had just lost my hero, my mentor,
right,
my idol, my older brother that I loved, and nothing was going to stop me from getting in the way of the truth of what happened to him.
And also being with his body. That's
exactly.
Really, and you're drawn. You want to be where they are.
Yes. So when I escorted his body back, we went through the military funeral at this little
just cemetery. To let our audience know, you didn't see his body then, but you did see it at the funeral home.
Yes, I did. I saw his body at the funeral home, and he looked fine. I mean, that sounds strange, but what I'm referring to is...
It was him.
It was him. I was positive it was him. I couldn't tell by looking at him what the cause of death might have been. And all the while this is going on, I'm constantly contacting the military liaison people that were assisting me as an ex-lieutenant and so on. They didn't have any answers either. And so after about 3 weeks of not getting any answers, I just decided, the heck with it. I'm buying a ticket, and I'm flying to Vietnam, and I'm going to find out what happened to my older brother.
And I know one of the places, one of the words that popped out at me in the book was when you said revenge. You know, you were thinking maybe you'd have to take revenge, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Again, at the time, I had no idea. All I knew was that I had a deceased brother. And, you know, you start thinking of all kinds of things. And one of the things that popped into my mind was he murdered? If he was murdered, I'm going to go there and I'm going to seek revenge.
Right.
And when you're 19, maybe you think you're not thinking as clearly as you should.
Well, I think a lot of people think about that revenge in the beginning, you know, for
mm-hmm.
lots of reasons, DWIs, you know,
mm-hmm.
all sorts of reasons that they would like revenge. There's so little that you can do after your
right.
sibling dies. Well, it's time for us to come up on break now, and when we get back to break, we're going to talk more about, with Tom Riley, about the death of his brother and about his wonderful book, Next to Kin, A Brother's Journey to War-Torn Vietnam. I wanted to tell you again that we are selling a set of 10 compact discs of selected shows of Healing the Grieving Heart. The discs are in an easy-to-carry and store box. And I'm pleased to have the opportunity to share with you pictures of my son, Scott, in whose memory I dedicate this work. Each CD has a different picture of him. The set will normally sell for $60, but for a limited time, it's available at the introductory price of only $45, with all proceeds benefiting the Compassionate Friends. To obtain an order form, please visit the Compassionate Friends website at CompassionateFriends.org or call toll-free number 877-969-0010. You can also contact me at my website, healingthegrievingheart.org, or you can email me at gchorsley@aol.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough.
Did you know your child's asthma attacks can be triggered by things like shower curtains, a blanket, even a teddy bear?
I feel like I'm choking.
And there are many other things in your home and your child's classroom you may not know about. For the latest information, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Help prevent your child's asthma attacks and avoid the emergency room. Call toll-free 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Or visit www.noattacks.org.
I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
When you combine energy secrets from ancient China and the latest breakthroughs in medicinal science, you get Power Healing with Dr. Shaw. Heard every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Each week, Dr. Shaw will bring you another step closer to the expanding world of body space medicine. You will quickly learn and appreciate how Power Healing is a perfect alternative to hospitals and expensive drugs. Take a step beyond modern medicine every Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time with Dr. Shaw on Power Healing, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and my guest today is Tom Riley, author of the best-selling book, Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to Wartime Vietnam. At the age of 7, both Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian. In July of 1907, Ron died in Vietnam. Tom, at age 19, journeyed to war-torn Vietnam to find answers. If you'd like to email me about this show or upcoming shows, my email is gchorsley@aol.com. You can visit my website at healingthegrievingheart.org. And if you'd like to participate in our show today, our toll-free number is 1-866-369-3742. Well, Tom, before break, we were talking about your getting ready to go to Vietnam to find out what had happened to your brother. So you're actually right now you've gone with his body back to home for the burial, and now you've decided to go to Vietnam. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And like I mentioned earlier, I just couldn't get any answers as to a cause of death. And I owed it to myself for loving him, and I owed it to him as helping raise me to get the answers. And I wasn't suspecting any kind of a government cover-up, but then I really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know what happened to him. And so it was out of love that I decided to take this trip to find out for myself and also to see where he died, what his final days were like, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was aware that I was going to an active combat zone. And I tried to do this officially. I contacted the State Department. I wanted to find out what it would take for a civilian to go to a South Vietnam at the time to an active combat zone. And all they could tell me was, don't go. I asked if, they kind of had the criteria. If you were a clergyman and you wanted to go, this is what you had to do. If you were a contractor and you wanted to go, this is what you had to do. But for a grieving, young, loved
teenager.
A teenager, they had
19.
No idea.
They didn't know who they were dealing with, did they?
They didn't know who they were dealing with. So I politely listened to them. And I told them I would accept their advice and not go. And as soon as I hung up the phone with them, I contacted my local travel agent, told them to buy me a round-trip ticket to Saigon. He thought I was totally out of my mind. I also went to my local doctor in the small town and asked what shots I would need to go to a tropical climate. I didn't necessarily tell them Vietnam. And
I love the way you take care of yourself.
So within a few days of deciding that I wanted to go to Vietnam myself to see what happened, to my brother. I had shots in different parts of my body. Both arms were aching, and it was hard to sit for a while, but I had the cholera and typhoid shots, malaria shots, and all this kind of stuff. And a few days later, I was on a Pan Am plane flying from Chicago to San Francisco, San Francisco to Hawaii to Guam to Manila, and I ended up in Saigon.
Did your siblings know you were going?
No, nobody knew I was going.
So you just went off. Were you scared at all?
Not really.
Or did you have that energy of, I'm going to do it? You had a mission, right?
Yeah, I was on a mission of love. And I knew I was going to an active combat zone. I knew that there was a potential of something happening to me. But I was kind of blinded to all that because I was on this one-track mission to find out what happened to my brother.
So that was kind of holding you up, rather than depression or crying or sadness. Or I'm sure you did some of that, but this mission was kind of holding you together?
Yes, exactly. It gave me a purpose. It gave me a purpose to channel my grief into. And I did grieve, don't get me wrong. I cried a lot at the death of my brother. But this was one of those things that I tried to take a negative and make it into a positive, as strange as that sounds, because it's still not ever going to be positive because I still lost my brother. But when I landed in Saigon, then I ran into another whole host of problems that actually didn't even give me time to think about my grief for the next week or so. Because I was immediately deported, wound up in Bangkok, Thailand. I didn't have the proper paperwork because I decided I would do this as an unauthorized escapade instead of officially, and so I wasn't welcome in South Vietnam as a teenage American civilian at the time. And it was ironic because we had about 500,000 people in Vietnam at that time all wanting to get out, and I'm trying to get in and they won't let me in. But I eventually with the
that is ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was very ironic, and but I eventually made it into South Vietnam with the aid of the Southeast Asian black market. And they smuggled me in for a price, and I went.
And so you had that money from the. What did it cost you to get in?
Oh, I spent most of the insurance money for my brother on this trip, on the plane tickets, on paying bribes to the people that I met up with in Southeast Asia, and so on. And
And by the way, everyone, this all is in the book. It's a fabulous book. I would definitely get it. How can people get your book?
All bookstores carry it. If a bookstore doesn't carry it, they can order it for you and have it in stock in a few days. You can also order it online at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. But it is a nationally published book.
And you got to his unit.
Yes, I did. I eventually made it to his unit, and I was accepted overwhelmingly by his friends. And,
did they hug you?
Oh, God, yes.
I just see his friends must have just loved you.
Well, his friends were hardened senior enlisted sergeants. And he was well-liked. He was well-respected by the guys in his unit. When they first met me, first of all, they couldn't believe that I was there. But as soon as they got past that in about 10 seconds, they totally accepted me. They hugged me. They plied me with Budweiser beer, which was their favorite pastime in base camp. And I actually got accepted almost as much as my brother was accepted by them. And they were glad to see me, and they protected me. We went through a few episodes of the war in Vietnam together. I was in country about 5 weeks. The book condenses it down to about a two-week trip. They were overwhelmingly accepting. They were grieving for my brother as well, which was interesting for me to see. We shed tears with several of his close buddies, tears of mine, tears of theirs. We toasted him with cans of Budweiser beer. It was quite an experience, and in so doing, I was able to not only learn about the last days, the final days of my brother's life, I was able to bring back the ground that his head fell on when he died.
What did you do with that?
Five precious stones. Well, I brought back, there were five precious little stones where they pointed out exactly where he lay, where his head was on the ground. And I brought back the stones, and I still have a couple of them. I gave one to my sister, one to my, and one to each of my other two older brothers, who were not as close. I was closer to my brother, much more closer than they were, but I wanted them to share what I had found out.
So do you have any rituals that you do in relationship to him? And
well, you know, with the military, we're kind of, survivors are blessed with public rituals a lot, you know, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and so on. But there is one very private thing that that I did and that I do on a daily basis. When I finish writing the manuscript, and I type the end on the manuscript of Next of Kin, I went down and I went through a box of his personal effects that was sent to me right after his death. I hadn't been in this box for 30-plus years. And something compelled me to open this box and go through his things. And one of the things I found in there was a Seiko watch that I mentioned in the book that he had purchased. One of the things he had purchased just shortly before his death was a Seiko watch. And I found that watch, and it had this kind of rotted away old army cloth wristband on it. And I picked up that watch, and it was a self-winding watch, and I shook it, and it started running. So I took it and I cleaned it up, and I put a new band on it, and I wear it daily. I haven't taken it off now since I finished the manuscript. And it loses, the watch loses 1 minute a day. And I figure that that has some kind of an effect on his shortened life.
Yes. Well, it's time for us to go to break again, and my guest is Tom Riley, and author of the best-selling book Next to Kin, A Brother's Journey to Wartime Vietnam. At the age of 7, both Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian. In July of 1970, Ron died in Vietnam, and we've been talking to Tom about his brother and about those experiences. I wanted to again tell you that CDs from this show can be purchased through the CompassionateFriends.org website or by calling a toll-free number, 877-969-0010. That's 877-969-0010. Or you can email me at gchorsley@aol.com or go to my website, healingthegrievingheart.org. These shows are archived on the Compassionate Friends and Voice America. Tom, when we come back from break, I wanted to ask you if there's anything that you feel like we've missed on the show or anything that you would like to say, especially to our audience. You're listening
Certainly.
To Healing the Grieving Heart. Great.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time for Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look, this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffered the loss of a child.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and my guest today is Tom Riley, author of the best-selling book, Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to Wartime Vietnam. At the age of 7, Tom's mother and father died in separate incidences, and his older brother, Ron, became his guardian. In July of 1970, Ron died in Vietnam. And we've been hearing Tom tell us about the story about Ron, his life, their life together, and also his experience of going to Vietnam and meeting his friends and his brother's friends and also finding more out about his brother's death. And I would recommend highly that you read the book, and from that you'll be able to, as I said, this is sort of a mystery in some ways about what happened to Ron, and a great way to find out is to purchase this book. Tom, I believe we have a caller on, Joyce. Is she there?
Yes, hello.
Oh, there you are. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the
Joyce.
Show.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you on. Did you have a comment for Tom or me?
I do, yes. I wanted to thank Tom for sharing his incredible story and to ask you, Tom, if you would be willing to describe your grief reactions to the loss of your parents and how your responses to their death might have differed to your responses to Ron's death and maybe what they had in common.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I touched on this briefly before about my reaction to my parents' death, or deaths, I should say. I think the tender age of 7 did a lot to, not deaden the grief, but it was almost more of a curiosity at that time, especially when my father died, because I wasn't as close to him as I was to my mother. But going through, watching firsthand all these rituals of the funeral home and the grieving relatives and the adult relatives I'm referring to, and it was an eye-opening experience for me. For both of my mother and father's funerals, only 7 days apart, so I was it was almost like deja vu. I was in the same funeral home, you know, a week apart, and I don't remember crying as a child over their deaths. It was this realization that they were gone. I was told by my older brother, Ron, you know, he explained to me what death really meant.
The age of 7, you're not really, a little bit later, you comprehend the whole thing a little more fully.
Yeah, you're insulated a little bit more at a younger age, I think, from your true emotions, and maybe they haven't even developed enough yet. But when Ron died, my world, I thought, came to an end. When I was given the notification of his death, physically, my knees buckled. I had to lean against this Army sedan in this little dusty driveway where the sergeant came to report his death to me. And the grief just, it almost brought me to my knees. And the ensuing days, and because, you know, here I was, I was 19, and I had shared more life experiences with my older brother. He would send for me in different parts of the world, and I would go and I would visit him when he was on furlough somewhere. And he took on the role of a guardian and almost as a parent figure to set me straight on the road to life, to a successful life. And so there is a whole lot more shared experience, plus your emotions develop more by the as you get older, obviously. So it was a much more raw experience. But there was a distinct difference between my response to my parents' deaths and to my older brother's death.
I just wanted to thank Joyce for being on the show. And Ron, we've got an email. I mean, excuse me, I called you Ron, Tom. That's interesting. Tom, we've got an email here from someone. Actually, I told someone about the book, and they read it. And her name's Jerry. She's from Utah. And she sent me an email, and she wanted to know this. She asked, Tom, do you think your early life has made you more empathetic with those who suffered losses?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Like I said, I kind of learned the experience of death early in life at age 7. I learned a lot about how to experience the loss of someone. And then through the loss of my older brother, and since that time, I've had other losses in my life. And I think it almost is a learned thing. Unfortunately, it's something that many of us have to learn along the way, but the experiences are accumulative.
Do you think there's a surrender aspect to it?
No. In my case, no. I don't want to surrender. And I think everybody makes that choice on their own. And you know, one thing I wanted to mention too to the listeners is a lot of people are looking for closure after a death. And I looked for closure. And I think even subconsciously, my first effort at closure of my brother's death was the trip, this weird trip that I made to Vietnam as a civilian teenager during the war. I thought I was looking for closure then. I thought if I just found out the details of his death, I could close this episode and get on with it. Well, I didn't find closure there. Then, many, many years later, 30 years later, I knew I was someday going to write a book about this. As I got older, I knew I was going to write this book. And when I wrote the manuscript and I typed the end on it, and I thought, well, okay, now maybe I have closure. And I didn't feel closure then either. And then once the book was published, I received my first copy of it from the publisher in UPS one night when I was having dinner. And I took that copy and I read it, because I never read my book in hardbound manner before.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a copy of that book and I placed it under my brother's name on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., and I thought, okay, this is going to be closure now.
Uh-huh.
And it still wasn't closure. And so when you talked about surrender, and maybe surrendering and closure are somehow related, but...
Well, I think surrendering to me is more like you're never going to get closure. You might as well face it.
Yeah, that could be.
Surrender to the idea that you're going to have closure, I think, is how I think of it.
That may be a good way of stating it, because there is no closure. And
yep.
I think it's important that there isn't closure, because if there's closure, it almost means like you want to forget about that person. And none of us want to forget about our
absolutely. Absolutely. We want to continue with those bonds, relationships, have rituals, and see where they and have them in our lives. You'll never forget your parents or Ron, or they're part of your fabric.
And nobody should forget their loved
ones. Absolutely.
You should memorialize them somehow. And I was fortunate enough to do it by writing this book. Not everybody can write a book about their loved one, but I think there are different ways of memorializing your loved one. And you know, some people that are able to do so, they'll set up a scholarship fund or they'll plant a tree. But I think when it comes right down to it.
Or create a website.
Yeah, or create a website like you. And,
well, you, I know you wanted to mention the Compassionate Friends.
Yes, I did. And I wanted to say that when I was going through this whole process, with my parents and my brother's death, I didn't have access to an organization like Compassionate Friends. And since I've learned about your organization of Compassionate Friends and the offshoots of it and so on, I think it's a wonderful thing to have in our society. And people need to know that they do have other people that they can talk with. And I had to go through this alone. And, you know, I toughed it out, and I probably had to tough it out a whole lot tougher than I would have if I had known about an organization like Compassionate Friends.
Or had somebody wonderful like you on the show, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's time to close today. I would definitely recommend getting Tom's book, Next of Kin, A Brother's Journey to Wartime Vietnam, so you can hear more about his story. It is very poignant and very written very sweetly. Please stay tuned again next week to hear Ben Seiss, who was a teenager when his brother was murdered. Ben will discuss how the loss of his brother has affected his life. Joining us on the show will be Lou Cox, founder of the Violent Crime Victim Services, located in Tacoma, Washington. Lou's a bereaved parent, a victim advocate, and a certified trauma service specialist. You can purchase selected CDs of Healing the Grieving Heart through the CompassionateFriends.org or by calling the toll-free number 877-969-0010 for a limited time. You can purchase a set of 10 CDs valued at $60 for an introductory price of only $45. You can also email me at gchorsley or go to my website at healingthegrievingheart.org. This show is archived on the Health Voice America as well as the Compassionate Friends websites. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal and support. Remember, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.